As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. How are you? Happy Tuesday to you here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester, back after a while away for the two of us. A shorter trip for Tommy, but the two of us haven't been here together for a little more than a week, and we are excited to be back here after a couple adventures. You might notice my nice tan there, Tommy, as I've been on an island for a little while with the family. Nice to get away. Good to be back, though, taking your calls at 869-1240. If you're listening to us on KFH, Max Powers in studio. He's got your calls there. You can leave us your video comments, Facebook, YouTube, X, all the places. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. And of course, for listening to us on the Odyssey app as well. Glad to be here, Tommy. Welcome back from Augusta. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Welcome back from Maui. You and I went opposite directions, but we both had pretty phenomenal adventures, it sounds like. Did you get some hula dancing in when you were in Hawaii?
We went to a luau. I did not hula dance. They didn't invite me up, unfortunately for them. But yeah, we had a blast. It was so good to take the family out there. We were in Hawaii. My wife and her family have gone out there forever. So it's a place that has grown on me a great deal, but to be able to take the kids out there now, made a big difference, and it was a lot of fun. I love it out there. Great people. The time, you know what? It's like 2 a.m. right now in the time zone I've been living in for like the last 8 days. So that's interesting. That time zone. It was so hard to keep up with the sports world, but a lot of it was really good because I could wake up on some days at like 8 a.m. and watch a little, little baseball. The national championship, which happened a lifetime ago, was at like 2 p.m, the first day I was in Hawaii. So it was great. It's a great place. It's a great experience. But it's not like, I'm sitting there griping and moaning to my bartender about Houston's loss in the national championship game. And he's just kind of like shaking his head. He's like, I don't know, man. He's like, I like surfing. I'm like, all right, fine. Humor me here. Cost me a lot of money, but whatever. How was Augusta?
Man, I don't even have words to put it into perspective. It was as perfect as it could be. I didn't even know what to expect going into it, but I can tell you that it exceeded what my expectations even could have been. Phenomenal. And the fact that I was there to watch Rory win the career Grand Slam, get his green jacket, man, it was immaculate. It was amazing.
Well, you get, and the great thing about that, because I was joking with you, I was like, you better be waving, when it was he and DeChambeau, I was like, you better be waving that USA flag and doing all that stuff. Nope. I was kidding. I mean, yeah. I think everybody on the planet was rooting for Rory McIlroy. And so the fact that you got to be there, you'd have a great story for people to be like, yeah, I got to go to the final round of the Masters. But, you know, if you said that in, I don't know, let's say 2021 on a random year, I don't know who won the Masters in 2021. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to remember when Rory got that one.
Yeah.
And almost choked it away again and all that went with it. Yeah. That might be the best part.
There were, you know, there have been other really historic Masters over the years. I mean, Tiger winning in 2019, his very first one in 97, Jack Nicklaus winning in 86. There have been some legendary final rounds of the Masters and, you know, big time, like this is one of them. And I don't know exactly at this point where it ranks. There's probably some recency bias that comes into play with it all time as far as the greatest final rounds ever. But it's at least got to be top five, if not higher than that for sure. Incredible. I mean, and the golf was great. The drama was amazing. There were so many things that I would have never even thought about had I not been there. For example, I'll just give you one quick thing. You know, most people know that there's a longstanding policy at Augusta National that you cannot bring your phones onto the grounds. So nobody had their phones. And the only way that you knew what was going on was when they would change the scores on the manual scoreboards around the course. And there were some boards that got changed slightly before other ones. So you would hear people react to that at another hole. And you're like, oh, my God, what happened? Like, and then all of a sudden they would update the one right by you and everybody would either cheer or groan. You had no idea. It was like an old school game of telephone and people are like leaning toward, you know, to one another. Like, hey, I heard that Rory has 4 feet for birdie on this other hole. Like you had no idea until you saw it manually. And so what was really fun was after we were done and we had left, going back and watching it on TV and being, because there was a lot that you, like, we were posted up on one hole. You don't see all the other shots, obviously. They don't have video boards. They don't have any of that. And so you don't know what happened until you go back and you watch it on TV. And that was something that I would have never even thought about until being there.
God, what do you even do right now at like to consume sports without your phone to react to it instantly?
I know.
That's interesting. That's really cool. That's awesome. And yeah, you meant like, I think for cat, like you just like to be able to tell people that like the last one that I think holds like pop culture value is Tiger in 2019. Not that the other tournaments aren't great. They are, but they don't stick like that. This one will stick because Rory finally got it done. And I even think like had he won it by 5-6 strokes, it would be different than like, we're all watching. It's weird watching that on an island, Tommy. I'm sitting there trying to like smuggle it. We're all at the pool and I'm trying to like smuggle it myself and catch the end. This is like getaway day for us. So we're just trying to kill time at the pool before our red eye flight later that night. And so I'm like huddled around my phone. And then my wife, she was like, you should look around right now. And like all the men at the pool are doing the same thing. And I'm like, well, what the hell am I doing this? Like, I'm going to go find a palm tree and sit in the shade so I can actually see it. And so I do that, and when he missed, what was that, on 18?
On 18, yeah.
I hear a groan, and I'm like looking around. I'm like, where? And then I look over, and I'm like, oh, everyone's over at the sports bar watching it. So I ran over there for the final. But even there, like everyone was pulling for Rory McIlroy, everyone. And there was like a crowd of people, and I'm like, wow, it's amazing. So good for him, good character, good for you who loves golf so much. Did you have a egg salad sandwich?
I did. I had egg salad, had pimento cheese, tried as many different things from the concession stand as I could. The prices are so affordable. I think I spent $30 the entire day on a bunch of different things. So that was cool. The merch experience is insane because the items that you can buy, you can only get there. They don't sell them online. You can find them on eBay, but they jack the prices up. The resellers do and all of that. It's overwhelming. You walk in and it's not uncommon for people to drop thousands of dollars in that store, just buying everything. I felt pretty good about, you know, how I made out, you know, with getting things for family and my wife and myself and all of that. But yeah, all in all, it was.
And your co-host.
You didn't ask me for anything. I would have got you something. You didn't ask me for anything. I
didn't get you. Again, I didn't get you anything from Hawaii either,
because you cannot take phones in. I had an old school list written out on a piece of paper. And I brought a pen and I'm checking things off the list as I'm going around and I'm buying things because you cannot pull up your phone.
That's awesome. I forgot to get you a necklace or something too.
So a puka worry. Shell.
No sweat. We have so much to catch up
we
on.
Do.
Like, it's crazy. Like, I can't believe that the national championship game was a lifetime ago. We have that. We have Royals baseball to get caught up on. This Tennessee quarterback situation is wild. So we'll get to it all today. Your commentary, welcome as well. It's all Brock Newcaster back after a long way away. We'll be right back, right after this.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrock. It's Tommy Caster. Max Power producing. We're glad to be with you. What a great... what a great time away for Tommy and I. It's been a while since the two of us have been here. The majority of a Major League Baseball has happened, it feels like, since we've been away or since I've been away. More games have been played since before I left. So we'll talk a lot of Royals here. We've got Felix Johnson coming up as well. Don't miss that. Our Chiefs insider, got to get caught up with Felix for the draft and all things, football and Chiefs with him. We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here on KFH as well. Certainly need it. The time change is it's going to take a minute to get used to, but we're here. Let's talk Royals, Tommy. So able to watch, as much of that as anything else. A lot of baseball, a lot of Royals, a lot of Rangers, kind of in the middle of the day out there. But it was great to have it for the Royals. You know, they're in the middle of this stretch, Tommy, of a 10-game road swing. That's going to be tough. Guardians, Yankees, Tigers, 10 games against teams all in the postseason. They come out of a home stretch where they win 5 of 7 against two other playoff teams, Baltimore, Minnesota. You feel really good about it. Now they're struggling on the road. And that's not all that surprising, I don't think. They're going to go up against a good pitcher tonight in New York. But the Yankees take it last night to take the opener. It's interesting. I didn't realize this until this morning. Cole Reagan's only the... it's the first time since 2020 he's given up more than two home runs in a game, which is pretty wild. But the Yankees got him last night, and home runs are probably going to be a big part of this series in that stadium and with torpedo bats. So the Royals are going to have to hit a little bit, and they just didn't do it last night.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, going back to what you had mentioned before about their struggles on the road, Brandon and I talked about it late last week as they were getting ready to kick off the road trip and what the expectation should be for them. And, and we actually talked to Jalen Thompson about this too on Friday, our Royals insider, about what the expectation should be, and them, being able to, if they can get out of this 10-game stretch on the road at 500, you feel pretty good about that. Now they're going to have some work to do to be able to get back to 500 because they dropped 2 of 3 to the Guardians and they lost last night. So you're going to have to make up, some ground here if you want to get back to 500. But they've got an opportunity, with Lugo on the mound, being able to do that and get this going through the rest of the rotation and, ultimately once they get done with New York going to Detroit. But I think the big concern is the offense and how do they get runs? How do they get production going where they're not leaving runners on base, where they're actually able to convert those runners on base to run scored? I think that's been a major challenge. And honestly, even though we've seen those offensive struggles really come to a head on this road trip, even going back to the last homestand, it was inconsistent at best offensively. So that's a major factor, I think, as we're continuing to work our way into the season, where they're going to, I think, have some decisions that they need to make offensively.
That's the struggle of the team so far. It makes me, we got a pretty good sample size here now that we've, you know, when you get almost 20 games into a season. Like, I think it's not too early to start looking for trends. And this team was a streaky offensive team a year ago. It may be a streaky offensive team again. And I think that part of that it kind of gets you a little nervous because the starting pitching's probably, and we've talked about this a billion times, probably not going to reach the level it reached a year ago. I think that expectation is too much to ask. And that's not based on this year's guys. It's based on last year's. You just don't get that very often in baseball. So how do you now battle through a streaky offense? I think you have to manufacture a little bit, and I think you have to, we'll probably see some lineup mixing and matching. I think 20 games into a season, okay, like I would like to run the same lineup and the same placement in the order and all these things out there every day too. I think baseball is a little simpler that way, but maybe there is something to like moving some guys around, mixing it up a little bit, trying some guys in different spots, doing a little bit of that to help this team. Even though we all love those four guys together at the top, I don't know if you mess with that, but maybe you do something because they are. I mean, you're looking right now and you're as bad as any offense so far in the American League. Like they've got to do something to get that turned around.
Yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily tinkering with the top of the lineup, but I think you've got to really evaluate if you are Matt Quatrero and even JJ Piccolo. I think you've got to evaluate the lower half of that lineup, and not even about moving players around. It's like whether or not some of these guys even play. MJ Melendez is unplayable right now. He just is. I mean, his batting average is under 100. Hunter Renfroe is basically unplayable right now.
Well, we talked about those two guys so much in the offseason.
His batting average is barely over 100. They're not the only two, but they're the two most glaring. Michael Massey has not had a good start to the season, at least offensively. Even at the very top of the lineup, Jonathan India is getting on base, which is good, but he doesn't have a very high average necessarily. But, you know, I think you can live with that because he is getting on base. But really it's Renfroe and it's absolutely Melendez. And this goes back to, you know, all the discussions that we had during the offseason and throughout spring training. You know, I was surprised, and I think you probably were too. I don't know if I remember your take on it, that they didn't make any moves to strengthen and bolster that outfield. And fortunately, Kyle Isbell is playing better this year, at least to start the season offensively. So that's good. You don't have all three of your starting outfielders, you know, being down in the basement, but it's not good at the corner outfield spots. And it wasn't last year either. And that's why it was so surprising that the Royals made no moves and really, you know, didn't really do anything to try to make that outfield better, at least offensively.
Kevin Biggio and Drew Waters get the start last night, which tells you they're ready to do something now. It's an interesting concept because India, you're right, after the blistering start has gone pretty cold. Massive, but I think there are a couple of things. Michael Garcia has been pretty good.
Yeah.
They're playing him every day in different spots. Freddie Fermin bailed them out a little bit at times offensively, I think, last year. Maybe it's time to find spots for him. Salvi has not been off to a great start this year, which he can be streaky like that anyway. So this, again, like this team was this streaky last year. And then all of a sudden, Melendez and Renfroe both got it going at the same time, sort of, and the offense became incredibly dynamic. So there is a waiting game probably involved here. It's just, can they pitch through it to the level they pitched through it last year? That's a good question that I don't know that we know the answer to. Bullpen's certainly better. Bullpen's much better than it was a year ago, and that'll help. They're 8-9. You go through that kind of offense, you're 8-9. Probably, Tommy, part of it is that they've played nothing but good teams so far this year either. They haven't really had a chance to beat up on anybody yet. I think there's a lot of reality in that too. And that, you know, you play that sort of schedule that they played to open a year, And you don't get a lot of games where you can come out and score 8, 9, 10 runs to sort of lift everybody up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, to your point, the bullpen has been a lot better. You know, outside of a couple of guys, I mean, Sam Long and Chris Stratton have not been good at all. No. And after the bad start to the season, and Brandon and I talked about this last week too, that after the bad start that Angel Zerpa had to the season, they haven't really used him. I mean, he's pitched the least amount of innings out of all relievers that started the season on the big league roster. Steven Cruz obviously was a call up, so you know, he hasn't gotten a whole lot of run out there. But Zerpa, they haven't really utilized a whole lot ever since he had a pretty bad start to the season. I wonder if that'll change, knowing, you know, the way that Stratton and Long have been pitching as of late. But everybody else, bullpen wise, has been pretty solid, has been pretty lights out. And you know, look at the starting pitching. I mean, you know, I know that there it's been up and down at times. And if you're just looking at a, you know, straight up ERA play for the starters, Michael Wacha has the highest ERA out of all of the starters, and it's slightly over 4. You know, so for all the things, and it's a long season, a long way to go, but for all the things that you can point at, the starters are doing their job. And for the most part, the bullpen is doing their job. They're just getting very little run support. And that's got to change if they want to try to flip the script. And, you know, they're under 500 by a game right now. If you want to get back over 500, you got to change that.
I think they will. I'm not really that worried about much still right now. It's a schedule problem. As much as anything, they're going to have a hard time. They've got to finish this series, and then they've got to go to Detroit for 4 and face 4 good pitchers. And then they'll get some games in, you know, at home against Denver or against the Rockies, Colorado, and Houston. And they'll probably have an opportunity there to score some runs. There's not a lot of relief schedule wise for a while for this team. Like, it's going to be a while before they get like a long stretch of games that you feel real good about. There's a lot of good teams, we think, right now, and they just happen to play all of them. So they got to win at home. They're going to have to figure out a way to win some of these games on the road. They're going to play 2 more against the Yankees here. Fried has been really good so far this year. That's who they get tonight. You got to go score some runs. And if it's not going to come, you know, when you go to New York, that's what's interesting. Like, we talk about how do you manufacture. Like, at some point, when you go to the Bronx, when you go play the Yankees, you just need to drop some bombs. Like, they need to just hit for a little power here in this series, too. You go to that stadium, go hit some home runs. And that's sort of what we're waiting on, too. Bobby Witt Jr. has been great. But where, you know, where's Salvi? Where's Vinny? Where's the power from this lineup right now? And without Renfro and Melendez, you know, outside of those main guys, like, we're not going to see power out of Biggio or Waters or Isbell or probably Massey. There's a lot of bats in this lineup, India, that are not going to hit home runs. Home runs is not going to be the Royals' thing this year. I don't think it is anyway. Like, it never was going to be. So when they're leaving guys on, that's a problem. Like, they should be manufacturing runs. That's why you bring in Jonathan India, right? You need table setters for that middle of the lineup, and they're just not doing enough of anything right now. We'll see. What do you think of baseball overall? There's not, you know, that we knew the Dodgers would be great. We knew that I don't know that we thought the Padres would be this good, but the Padres are great. The Giants are off to this blistering start. And I haven't paid a lick of attention to the Giants yet. They're 12-4. The American League is moderately predictable, I'd say, right now. Everything looks about like we thought it would, except maybe the Angels out to a good start. But we're almost a month into this thing. Tommy, how have you felt about baseball so far?
I mean, it's been wildly entertaining. I know that outside of the teams in the National League West that you mentioned, I don't know if I'd want to be in that division. Like, if I'm an opponent, just flat because of how good these teams have been. And, I think that it is still extremely early, but you can now draw some conclusions on some trends overall. And, you know, look, I think that the Royals, considering the division that they play in, it's going to be competitive. You've probably got 4 out of the 5 teams that could absolutely contend. You know, but at least you're not playing in a juggernaut division like the National League West.
You can get, we can get trends out of this. Like, we can definitely get trends out of this. That I think the trend we pay attention to the most right out of the gates here is that the division looks again like it's four teams deep. Don't you think? Minnesota's 5-12. I get it. Everybody in the world that doesn't think Minnesota's going to be good at some point this year. I think the AL Central looks pretty good. But Detroit might be the most surprising. They're following it up so far. They're 10-6.
Yeah.
We wondered if they'd be able to follow up that hot finish last year. Man, they can pitch. They can pitch.
That's now the biggest thing. Their pitching is incredible. And so the Royals are going to have a pretty significant challenge, especially when you've got the struggles offensively. You continue on this series with the Yankees against good starting pitching, especially against Max Fried for sure. And then you go into Detroit and you got to take on their pitching staff. It's absolutely a challenge. I'd feel a whole lot more comfortable with it if the Royals were trending upwards offensively and not the other way around.
It's crazy about them is they're hitting. Like, outside of these Yankees that the Royals are playing right now, it's the offense right now for Detroit that's been leading the way. So I don't know if that's going to continue as I just played a game with myself. Like, if I look at their lineup, how many of these dudes do I know? I know more than I thought I did, but it's still like it's not a who's who in Major League Baseball. But the Royals have got to get it figured out. It's so funny that this is so similar. You know, they're not record wise off to the blistering start, certainly, that they were a year ago, but we're having a lot of the same conversations that we had a year ago. Streaky offense, too many spots in the lineup are producing nothing for them. Starting pitching has been good. I got to tell you, though, if we're talking Royals and we're talking overall, you know, outlooks and things like that, I am really pleased with the bullpen. And I think over time, it's going to help the Royals win a lot of games this year. You just have to turn it into now, how does a good bullpen game allow the offense to come back in a game late? Last night, you got an inning and a third out of Schreiber and Lynch. Clean, right? Like, now you've got to be able to start flipping that around on the opposition a little bit. And while your bullpen is keeping you in a game, not just holding a lead, but keeping you in a game, get a little late offense. The Royals blew a lot of opportunities again last night. I had it on. I was listening through. They only had two hits in the game, but I was listening. I was watching it on like MLB Network because I was trying to catch up on work last night. And it was not the Royals broadcast that was on. And they were just almost laughing at, they were like, oh my God, another pop fly and another wasted opportunity. It was like an infield fly, like another wasted opportunity for this offense. My goodness. Like, just nothing. Like, you could hear it from the other side, right? Like, it was interesting to hear that. They're just like, they just can't get anything converted right now. And that's the thing. Like, they had opportunities even last night, as, you know, as Lugo's battling and the bullpen keeps you in it, that they just can't get over that hump offensively to string it together. But I think it's coming. I mean, I think it's coming, but it's visible right now.
I sure hope so. I mean, the only way that a bullpen can help you win games, you know, regardless of how strong they are, you've got to get the run for it. You've got to give them a lead to be able to hold. And that's been the challenge up to this point. So, you know, I don't know. And this is probably a larger discussion, a larger conversation as the days go on. Does MJ Melendez, do they need to move him? Like, do they need to find a way to, like, maybe send him down to Omaha for a little bit, get his swing right? I've seen some comparisons of back in 2014, the Royals actually sent Mike Moustakas down to Omaha for a period of time early in the season. He was really struggling offensively. He was in Omaha for a while. They called him back up, and he was an integral part of the back-to-back World Series runs that the Royals had back then. Could the same be said for MJ Melendez? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think that you've got the big question is, who do you have to replace him? And, you know, what do you want to do while he's gone? But as far as him being, you know, a consistent player right now, it's not there. I mean, let's talk about his slash line real quick. I mean, he's got a slash line currently of 077, 182, 103 for an OPS of 284. You can't get much worse than that for a starting outfielder in Major League Baseball. I think you've got to make a move.
Brendan Hawson is headed to Iowa. So K-State loses one. How much have I missed, Tommy? Has there been a lot of movement in that? Like, have we seen?
There's been some.
You're going to have to catch me up because, like, what has KU done? What has Wichita State done? We left town and we get a letter from the athletic director talking about the money needed and all this. And like, that's the thing. That's the part of being gone that has been near impossible to keep up with.
Yeah, there's been some movement, especially with Kansas State. Doug McDaniel is in the transfer portal. So that happened yesterday. That came down yesterday. He entered the portal. There have been a couple of others, and I know that I was looking at a list, you know, earlier of, you know, some of the different changes that have been made. Anyenso, he entered the transfer portal, so their backup big man is in the portal as well for Kansas State. But really the big one, you know, is Doug McDaniel. And, you know, he was going to be, by all accounts, the leader of this team next season. And so I don't know exactly what that means moving forward for the targets for Jerome Tang. You know, but McDaniel is gone. You mentioned Hazen is gone and is going to Iowa. So, yeah, I mean, there are some significant changes and there's going to be some rebuilding that Jerome Tang is going to have to do.
And that's, you know, that's an interesting. It's an interesting idea because that team last year that I still maintain, man, like the pieces, they just for whatever reason. And we saw it. And so that feels a little bit vindicating. I just like, man, they're going to start over and I can't decide if I think it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know yet. I think it's probably not a good thing. It would be on April 15th where I would sort of lean or guess. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it would have been better had they been able to keep all of these players together, most notably McDaniel and Hassan. So that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough at K-State. I don't know what
they did. By
yet.
The way, they did land Bashir, who it was one of the top targets in the portal, I believe from Monmouth, and he's a pretty elite shooter. We talked to Tim Fitzgerald about him on Thursday, so you would think that he's maybe the replacement for Housen next season for the Wildcats as far as a shooting threat is concerned. Abdul Bashir, I believe is his name. So they landed him. They also got a transfer yesterday coming in from UNC Wilmington, Kamari McGriff, which I don't know much about him, but they were able to land him. He's a forward. And so, you know, they brought him in as well. And he was with UNC Wilmington for a long time. He averaged, this was in 2024, he averaged 11.5 points and 4 rebounds in a game. He started 12 of the 34 games he played in. So, you know, that's what they've got going on.
You mentioned UNC Wilmington. I did see that UNC Greensboro guard, is it Giles or Giles? I don't know yet.
Sure.
Kenyon Giles. And it's funny, and I don't. Like, I don't even say that tongue in cheek. Like, legitimately, we don't even have a chance to, like, learn much about these dudes. But he looks like a decent score, good shooter coming in, which the Shockers certainly need. And then they got Jarrett Valencia out of Monmouth. Didn't score a ton, but was an okay 3-point shooter. So a couple of shooters that can come in. Did I miss anybody else there? Shocker fans, you can let us know in the video streams as well. But I've got those two, and that's it for the Shockers. Not that those are bad; those are decent. Those are decent, you know, gets, I think, for the Shockers and what they're looking to try to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I don't know a whole lot about, you know, everything else that they've got going on. I know that last I saw. You know, obviously they were, you know, they were able to get the guy from East Tennessee. And that was Boyd, yes. Cron Boyd. That was really the main move prior to us leaving. And it sounded like they were able to at least get another one or two guys, you know, out of the portal over the weekend.
Dre Kindell, who, by the way, who they've already got, was an All-American. I mean, I'm kind of just trying to follow Taylor Eldridge at this point for all the Shocker stuff. And we'll get Taylor in. Once the dust settles a little bit and they start to try to piece a roster together, I don't think Paul Mills can talk about a lot of this stuff yet. So we'll also do that at some point. And I will get Kevin Saul. It's hard. It's really, really difficult to keep up with. It'll be easier at Kansas because everything involved will be headline guys almost certainly. But now maybe that's the road Kansas State's taken too. You know, they're not, we'll see if they go the road they went last year, which is kind of like high major, big key contributors just sort of changing places, or if they decide to go, you know, probably the route Wichita State's trying to go and a lot of others. You go poach the best of, you know, that next rung perhaps below to try and get players to lift up. But it isn't, man, it is impossible to keep up with. It's just, it's wild.
Yeah, and it certainly seems like, you know, Valencia, Jarrett Valencia from Monmouth is, you know, a top target, obviously, for the Shockers. And there are a lot of ties. I mean, a lot of ties with him and the program. I didn't realize until I started following it from Taylor Eldridge that P.J. Cousinard, former Shocker, coached him for 3 years at his high school. And then there are some other players that, you know, came from that same school, including Zion Pipkin, you know, is from that same high school that Jarrett Valencia is. So there are some ties for sure with Valencia and Wichita State already. So, you know, I would think that that would be a prime target and a prime addition for Paul Mills if they're able to land him.
I did see they didn't get Abioha out of Hoxie.
They didn't, yeah.
I did see
he ended up going to West Virginia, so that, you know, he's, you know, one of the main acquisitions. There's a new head coach for the Mountaineers since Darren DeVries left. It's the North Texas coach that's now at West Virginia, and he was one of the first guys that, you know, that the Ross Hodge, I believe is his name, was able to land there. And so Obioha did not end up at Wichita State.
North Texas, the basketball coaching feeder school.
Yeah,
now,
which pretty much
nobody saw coming, which is really interesting. Not disappointed to see that coach leave the league, if we're being honest. And then I saw Quincy Ballard goes to Mississippi State, joins Chris Jans. That makes a lot of sense and is a pretty cool landing spot for him, even though we hated to see him go. Oh, this just popped into my head. We haven't talked about. So as I'm saying that about Ballard, and we wondered if he'd be a high major candidate, and in places like Kansas, obviously not, because Florey's coming back.
Yes.
What did everybody make of that? Yeah. That's one of these like news items. It's been so long since we've been here. Like, what is the vibe there now? Because that sort of changes everything again for KU.
Yeah, there were some really interesting comments, and I don't know if you had an opportunity to read Shreyas Lotta's article.
I just saw that he came back, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, there, so okay. First off, you were right, so I'll give you your flowers. You were right on that, that your gut told you that he was going to be coming back to Kansas, and I had kind of written him off. I didn't think that he would be coming back, so you were right in that regard. Where I was right was in an interview that Florey gave to our KU insider Shreyas Lotta from the Kansas City Star after he decided to come back. I had said that I felt like this was really an issue with the usage of Florey last season. And that was a lot of what Florey said, that, you know, he's not going to come out and say that he was trying to get more money and that sort of thing. But it really didn't sound like that was a major driving factor. I'm sure it was a factor in some capacity, but it really sounded like it was about the fact that he was not getting the playing time that he felt like he needed, even though he was behind and blocked by Hunter Dickinson. It seemed like from Florey and his camp that when KJ Adams went down with the injury and Florey was incredibly productive, as soon as Adams comes back, Florey goes back to the bench and saw his minutes decline over the final games of the regular season and into the tournament. And there was a lot of conversation, it sounded like, between Florey and his camp about, is Kansas the right spot for me moving forward? And would he have a better opportunity somewhere else, even though Hunter Dickinson and KJ Adams were set to lead the program? It sounded like he was able to talk to Bill Self, and, you know, Bill Self is a master recruiter and was able to convince Florey to ultimately come back. And I'm sure that there was a bump in NIL as well.
It all goes together. It's all why I felt like he was going to come back. I agree, I think, with where your head was, that it was a usage thing and not a money thing. And that's why I always thought he'd come back, because if it's just a money thing, nobody's going to pay him more than Kansas. So that wasn't ever like the thing. And if it's a usage thing, again, like if you're anybody in Florey's camp and you don't think Kansas is the best place for you this year, I thought that's where I was like, he's going to come back, because that's a disservice to that kid. There is no better place for him than Kansas. Never has been, never was going to be. The door was wide open. The issue was he didn't have a lot of room to play, and he's a freshman. And so that's where we talk about with like Bill Self and adjustments. Like, that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think, for some of these older school guys, is how slowly can you even afford to bring somebody on anymore? And it's not going to be a problem for Darren Peterson. That's not what we're talking about, because Bill Self plays those kinds of freshmen. Great, whether it's Grady Dick or Johnny Furphy, like what? That's not the kind of freshman we mean there. But those bigs that typically grow over time in his program that you see are tantalizing, and then by the end of it, I mean, Bill Self can just walk in with a piece of paper in his hand and say, well, you want to find the best centers in college basketball over the last 20 years? I bet I've got half of them, right? Like, nobody does that better than Bill Self. So I'm glad that cooler heads prevailed and that they got what they heard what they needed to hear from Bill Self, because he's going to have the best opportunity to flourish there. That's why I kept saying he's going to come back. Like, this isn't a money thing. It's not like Kansas doesn't believe in him or anything. He's the key to Kansas, right? Like, they want to operate through a big. Now, I don't know if he's going to be the key. Like, they're not going to lean on him offensively like they did Hunter Dickinson or they did David McCormick in their national championship year. But he's going to be one of the big parts of what they do next year, especially defensively. And so that's who knows? Maybe he can become an offensive force like Doak did over time. But did we expect that out of Doak when he was a freshman? I certainly didn't. We just thought Doak was this physically imposing superhuman that was going to make it really difficult for other teams to do what they wanted to do. And then all of a sudden it's like, man, he's unstoppable offensively because nobody can keep up with him physically. Maybe Florey can do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean,
he's the best place for it.
The difference is the body type of those two guys. I mean, Doak was, you know, like a brick wall out there, and anything within 5 feet, he was automatic. Florey is tall but lanky, not like Doak in that regard. But I think that there's a skill set there where he can certainly continue to develop and be a pretty significant offensive threat for the Jayhawks.
His ceiling physically is to be one of the biggest, most physically imposing college basketball player. I mean, I think that's why that's an arm length and all that kind of stuff. I forgot that happened, but we'll revisit some portal stuff in the next hour or two. But we'll come back in Sports Daily. We got a lot to talk about. Speaking of portal, this Tennessee quarterback situation is wild. Got to hit on that and other things. Felix Johnson joins in the next hour. Don't go away.